I'm Rodrigo Blankenship, and you're listening to the Savage Pads Podcast.
Welcome to part three of Georgia-Alabama Week on the Savage Pads Podcast, part of the UGASports.com podcast network. I'm your host, Doug Battle. And in this episode, the kicker that kicked Georgia to its first win at Bryant-Denny Stadium, Billy Bennett, is joining the show. He's going to tell us a little bit about that kick as well as his life and career. He's had some crazy things happen, including touring with the Grammy Award-winning band MGMT and acting alongside Matthew McConaughey in a film. So Billy's joining us. Great segment coming up with him. After the Dog Till I Die segment with Billy, my good friend Corey Amick is returning. We're going to talk Georgia-Alabama in the extra point segment and make our picks for this weekend's game. We're assuming that game's going to happen. Obviously, things are in flux with Nick Saban testing positive for COVID. We shall see. But in the meantime, might as well give you guys some free Chick-fil-A. Give us a follow on Twitter at Savage Pads and retweet our tweet promoting this episode or the David Pollock episode for your chance to win free entree from Chick-fil-A. We're giving quite a few out. Give us a follow, retweet. Stay tuned. We've got a great episode coming up.
Practice every day.
Man, oh man. Mono y mono.
He definitely 6 hour mods, me and myself. As close as we have right now to rope climb.
When we scored, I honestly did not know where I was for about 5 seconds.
Early on, you could see with Jake, just like with Fran talking to him.
Maybe one of the most underappreciated quarterbacks in the country.
And we got to keep feeding the running back.
I don't think we've yet to see the tight ends.
I think Georgia does a great job bringing pressure on third down.
Turn around 2 weeks later in the SEC championship, we look like a completely different team, and we made them look like a completely different team.
I mean, it's hard to get emotional thinking about it.
And it was my job to kind of get outside the corner. And
as soon as I let it go, I knew it was good.
From that point on, I kind of began to trust of Eric Murray as my quarterback.
The kid was just special.
Tyler Simmons, he was onside.
Everybody respects the specs.
That's what every Georgia fan should hinge their hopes on.
Alabama and Georgia are the best two teams in the country.
I feel like we are the true running back you.
I have great confidence that we're going to see the personification of Georgia football.
Welcome to the Savage Pads Podcast. UGA record-setting kicker Billy Bennett is with us for part two of Georgia-Alabama. Billy, thank you for joining us.
Doug, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes, we are very excited to have you. We had to kind of go back a little bit to find guys that had beaten Alabama, which is a little unfortunate, but I usually try to have someone that is associated with good memories of that week. And so we were very, very happy to have one of those people here with us. And I know a lot has happened for you since those playing days. It probably feels like a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
Can you walk our listeners through some of your story that's unfolded since your days playing for Georgia?
Yeah. So, the first thing people always ask me when they're, kind of catching up with me, people always say, "Oh man, you were so good." And then they'll be like, "Why didn't you make it in the NFL?" It's always like, "Yeah, thanks for the compliment. Yes, I know I didn't make it in the NFL."
I wasn't even going to ask that.
But I actually got picked up as a free agent by the Panthers right after I finished, and right after the draft, actually.
Casey was there, right?
Yeah, Casey was there. And, of course, the guy is an amazing kicker. He's also an amazing kind of player representative in the NFL. And he was his own agent at the time. He had just signed a new 5-year deal. And the guy literally has tree trunks for legs. I mean, it wasn't really a competition between him and I. But he was really gracious and kind of like took me into his home and was just a great mentor just for that short time. But that was really my only shot. I had a couple other tryouts over the years. But I pivoted to music not long after that and started touring with bands. My buddies, I happen to be friends through some friends at UGA with the guys in a band called MGMT.
Right.
And, this was 2005, 6, 7. So they got signed to a record label and started hitting the road. And I said, "Man, let me come on the road with you guys and drive the van and do the sound." And it was either that or work at my family plumbing business in Athens,
right.
Which I did do for a while. And you'll probably still see my picture on the vans driving around town. I think they just took my picture off the van like last year.
Wow. Okay.
Did the family plumbing business for a hot second and then hit the road with this band and did that for a couple of years. Was based out of New York, kind of got trial by fire as a live sound engineer. You know, I was doing sound at Bonnaroo, Coachella, Glastonbury in the UK, festivals in Japan. You know, we opened for Paul McCartney at Fenway Park in front of the Green Monster, and opened for Radiohead at a cricket stadium in England with 60,000 people. So I had a lot of great mentors there along the way too, who kind of showed me the ropes about live sound. And I had also had a studio, recording studio mentor, a guy named David Barbie, who is the head of the UGA Music Business Program. Yeah.
Right.
Georgia.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
So yeah, so David taught me the ropes in studio recording. And so once I got off the road with MGMT, I ended up recording their second record, which at the time was a big flop, but it's worn the test of time, and critics seem to love that record. That's called Congratulations.
Is that with like Electric Feel?
That was the record after that. So the one with all the hits on it was Oracular Spectacular.
Right.
And that's how we, you know, ended up touring the world and all this stuff. And, you know, they weathered the sophomore slump and made an incredible album, but it didn't have all of those kind of electronic hits that people had kind of come to know them for.
Right.
So, you know, people were didn't get what they expected, and that didn't make folks happy, but it is a beautiful record, and they've made many since. They're still a band and they still do their thing.
Yeah.
So that kind of got me going in the music world, and then I moved to Nashville not long after all that died down. The touring took its toll on me, you know, physically, spiritually, mentally.
I
was a kind of a mess at the end of it, to be honest. And had to leave a lot of that stuff behind. So I ended up in Nashville and in 2013 and just loved it there. I was a studio engineer there. I had another great mentor that taught me all about analog recording. His name was Andrea Tokic, and he recorded the Alabama Shakes first record that kind of broke them.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And he did it all on analog tape. And so I worked at his studio under him, and he gave me the full rundown on recording to tape, maintaining the machines, you know, how to cut tape, how to clean the machines. And I was just like in hog heaven. So I did that for a few years. And ended up starting to teach at Belmont University as an adjunct teaching audio engineering.
Okay.
And then decided I wanted to get a master's degree and pursue maybe a full-time teaching career. So I came up to NYU 2 years ago, and I just finished my master's in interactive telecommunications, which is a big word. Yeah, thanks, man. it's been quite a journey, you know, doing my thesis in COVID. But I basically, for my thesis, I made a musical wand that you can play music with.
Oh, no way.
Here's one of the prototypes. You can see.
So it's like an instrument.
About a foot long. Yeah, it's an instrument. And depending on which direction you wave it, you know, it'll play a specific note, so you can perform with it.
Does it sound like a flute, or does it sound, how's it?
Well, it can sound like anything you want, because it just sends MIDI notes to the computer.
Wow, that's
awesome.
So
yeah, it's basically like a controller at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's like a MIDI controller.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Well, that's, so yeah,
are,
so
are you planning to, you getting patents for that? Are you planning to get into the music product business?
Yeah, I actually, you know, patents are kind of more trouble than they're worth sometimes, and they're also very expensive. I definitely looked into it, but I didn't invent any new technologies, but I kind of combined them in a novel way. But but there's a couple of companies that I've been interested in doing work with. One's based out of Nashville. They're called Artifon.
Okay.
And they make some amazing instruments, and I kind of sent them my work, and so they kind of sent me some of their prototypes to kind of user test and stuff. But yeah, I love product design. I love making music. I love making instruments. You know, and this is all new for me. I just learned how to code in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But it's definitely become a passion of mine.
Wow.
And that along with teaching. So
yeah.
Yeah.
So are you hoping to teach back at Belmont in Nashville, or you're up in, where are you now? Brooklyn?
I'm in Brooklyn. Yeah. Okay. I love it up here. You know, I've always loved New York, just, could never quite put the pieces together, mm-hmm. back in the day, but now I feel a lot more, grounded up here, and I have a really good community of people around me. Okay. I have my partner is up here, and so you know, it feels like home. And you know, I miss Athens. My family's still there, and I go back as much as I can. With COVID and all that stuff, I haven't been back since Christmas, so I'm definitely right. overdue for a visit.
Yeah, sure. Well, wow, that you've had quite the unique story. I talked to quite a few players, and have yet to have anyone in the recording business. I guess Sony Michel, I don't know if you're familiar with his rap music. He made some rap music and connected with
that out. Why have I not checked that out?
Yeah, he was a student, he was making stuff. I actually was fortunate enough to do one song with him in my studio.
No way.
Yeah, but he's connected with Quavo.
Fly Guy Two Stacks.
Yeah, you're looking at it now. that's him.
Yes.
Yes. MGMT, that's crazy. So you did the MGMT thing. Also, I guess another unique experience you've had is you got to act alongside Matthew McConaughey on the big screen.
Yeah.
So can you walk our listeners through how you became Marshall's kicker in the feature film We Are Marshall?
Yeah, that was a crazy experience. So that was kind of in my post-college whatever floating around phase.
That's kind
you know
of
how
I'm there
a
right
lot of
now,
people
so
get stuck
you.
In Athens
yeah
you know, for their fifth and sixth senior years,
right.
So I was literally in bed one day and I got a text from my brother Jason saying, you know, they're having tryouts in Atlanta for some movie, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, like I'm rolled back over and went to sleep. And then my sister called me and was like, you got to go up to Atlanta. It's like it's a football movie and they need football players. And I was like, all right. So I went up there to this hotel. There's like 1,000 people that showed up and it's all like high school players and some former college, like small school players. But it was right. kind of a funky mix because it wasn't any big time college players because you were going to get paid to do it. So that would make them ineligible. And it was also not any high school players who had college prospects for the same reason. So it was like everyone who wasn't good enough to make it to the college level, or people like me who just finished but didn't have anything else going on. So, you know, for whatever reason, I happened to be... Well, not for whatever reason. I just was the best kicker there, obviously.
So did they do a tryout? Like they just wanted to pick the best kicker?
So first you kind of just handed them your paper and signed up. And then they said, now look, you guys with long hair, you know, this is the 70s. So if you got long hair, we want to keep it long. And I was like, all right, check. And he was like, and there were at this time only 4 or 5 black players on the team. So, you know, our numbers are limited there. We can only take so many, you know, African-American players. And I was like, all right, I'm good there.
Yeah, which is like the opposite now.
Right, right. And then they said the average weight was 185 pounds. So all you big guys are out. And I was like, well, this is great, you know. And I've got like far more experience than anyone in this parking lot.
Yeah,
you know?
And I'm like a record-setting kicker, too. That helps.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and then we did the physical tryouts and I you know, passed that fine. And there was another punter there, actually. I think he went to some Ivy League school. It was a real nice guy and we got along great. But yeah, so the next thing I know, you know, they give us a schedule. We get on a bus and drive up to West Virginia, where Marshall is. And, you know, we film a scene. The first scene we film was with McConaughey at the actual burial site of 6 unidentified players from the crash. So it was like really heavy.
Yeah.
You know, and just a beautiful thing to get to be a part of. You know, we got to watch his process, how he would do a take and then he'd do another take a little bit different, and he would kind of play with his lines, and kind of really, you really got to see his kind of skill as an actor and just how seriously he took the whole thing, you know. It was really cool to see that. And then, you know, there was one night where we were getting on the elevator to go to our hotel room, and he got on the elevator too. And it was just like, someone said like one funny comment, but everyone was just like super quiet around him. You know, we're just like, oh my gosh, this guy is like so cool.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I could feel for the guy because it's literally everywhere he went, you know, you could just feel when he was on set because all eyes were on him.
You know, everyone just changes.
A commanding kind of charismatic presence. So, you know, in some ways people envy the guy, but I certainly don't. I mean, it's a blessing and a curse being that
right.
talented, that good looking, on and on, you know. I definitely can feel for people in that situation.
Yeah. Well, I guess you were perfect for that role because you are, or I guess you were just coming out of being a college kicker. So I guess
as an actor,
it's easy to play something that you just are.
Stretch.
Right. So I want to talk for a moment about your career as a college kicker, and specifically that game winner against Alabama in 2002. It's Georgia Alabama week. Everybody's getting excited, thinking through, you know, what's going to happen this week. And it's just so nice to look back on a time when we beat Alabama. So can you walk our listeners through that high stress situation and how you confidently hit the kick that would lead to Georgia's first win in Bryant-Denny Stadium ever?
Yeah. I believe that was there was a big controversy at the time because I believe that was that the Pat Dye game. Pat Dye had said something about Georgia being man enough or not to beat to beat Alabama. So Pat Dye, who was a former, I guess he was a former Bulldog, but also like had coached at Auburn. He said some stuff about Georgia not being man enough to go down to Alabama and beat Alabama in Alabama. And I believe it was the first time, that game was the first time we'd ever ended up ever beating Alabama at Alabama. Alabama wasn't the same team they are now, not to take anything away from us, but, but they were, I think it looks like they were number 22 at the time, but it was so there was a big the gauntlet had been laid down. You know, we were just like, this old guy doesn't know, he's not suiting up, he doesn't know what it's all about. So you know, we went down there. It was a tough game. It was hot as hell that day. It's one of the things people always recount. I don't remember because I was in pads and was sweaty already. Yeah. But I mean, I could tell on that drive there was less than a minute to go, and we were driving and we were down by two, I think, or one. And you know, you could tell the offense kind of just took their foot off the gas. Like once we got in field goal range, they weren't like passing anymore. They were just kind of running up the middle and like kind of falling down.
They were in field goal mode.
Yeah. And I was like, this is coming down to me.
Yeah.
And you know, the camera was right there by the kicking net. And I just remember like making faces into the camera because it was just like, it was like my moment. I was so cocky. and I think it was just like the stuff you live for, you know. It's like, it's coming down to me and I can win the game. And I know I can do this. I've done it 1,000 times. And so I went out to kick it, and they call a timeout, of course. And the thing I always do in those situations is I get off the field and I do my regular routine coming back on. So I left the field and kicked a few balls into the net. And then when they called me back out, I went out as usual. I think a lot of kickers just stand out there and get that huge lump in their throat while they stare down the goalposts, you know.
Right.
And I think that's just like such a huge mistake. So yeah, I went back out there, snap and hold were great, and we just knocked it through. So that was an amazing day, and I'm so proud to have just been able to be a part of that and be a part of such a great team, kind of getting Georgia back into the national picture, you know. Coach Rick was a big part of that. Coach Don and recruiting all those great players like you did to set us up for that. So, yeah, it was a good time to be a Bulldog for sure.
Yeah, well, Georgia's certainly going to need a Billy Bennett-type performance from Jack Podlesny this week coming up on Saturday. And I guess the mental aspect of kicking is always interesting to me because there's a lot of kickers that have the ability. They're able to get the distance on it and are capable of accuracy, but it seems more often than not that it's a mental battle. There's guys that go through slumps, and there's guys like yourself that are supremely confident in those moments going into it. How do you, as a former kicker, I guess, what advice would you give to a kicker now to mentally prepare for those type of moments and to also shake off if, say, earlier in that game, if you'd missed a kick and now you're going to kick one for the win, how are you able to have a short memory and know that you're going to make it like you did?
Yeah, I mean, I think the key is to get the mind aspect out of it completely. I mean, you know, when you hear about guys who are in the zone or in the flow or whatever, ask them, what were you thinking in that moment? They just look at you like you're crazy. Like, I wasn't thinking anything. Yeah. I was doing the thing. You know, so for me, it was all about a feeling. I can even make that place on my foot where the ball goes. I could almost make that tingle. Like, I knew right where the ball was supposed to fit on my foot. I could feel in my abs kind of like how tight it would be the moment I make impact. I was just tuned into my body so much in those moments that you just kind of let that muscle memory take over and you kind of get out of the way. Because if I was ever like, oh, don't pull it, if you think stuff like that, you're either going to pull it because that's just what you thought, or you overcompensate and you push it. And that's why practice and repetition is so important. It's the same with golf. It's a lot like golf. Like, if you're thinking about what you're going to do instead of doing what you're going to do, you know, that's when you get problems.
Yeah. Well, I guess Dog fans are hoping Podlesny will be in the moment like you were. And, but there's another Bennett on the field for Georgia that we're hoping to see a clutch performance from. Yeah. And that's Stetson Bennett. And I know as someone named Doug Battle, always felt like a special connection with the player Trey Battle when he was on the field. Every time he did anything, I was like, yeah, like we have the same name. He was obviously we're not related. But I'm curious for you, what are your thoughts on Georgia's quarterback Stetson Bennett and how he's performed in his two starts thus far?
Well, he sure got a heck of a QB name, Stetson Bennett. I love that. You know, you love those archetypal kind of QB dudes.
Yeah. It's like you're playing NCAA, the video game, and every season they just generate like random player names. And at some point, it's going to generate the quarterback name Stetson Bennett.
Totally. Yeah, he looks great, man. I mean, my thing with Georgia is every year we have the talent, you know, but do we catch the breaks and do we – it's really – yeah, a lot of it's about catching breaks and staying healthy. You know, that's not to say that Kirby hasn't done an amazing job with this team, for sure. And it's really great to see him kind of carry on the UGA legacy. Yeah. But we've got the talent every year, you know, I'm convinced of that for sure.
Yeah. Well, I definitely think we've had it and we had it when you were there and we've had it pretty much, every other year since, it seems like. So we'll see what happens on Saturday and hope for the best with Stetson Bennett. But Billy, we appreciate you taking a moment of your time to join the show and catch Dog fans up on your life and career. And I do want to ask, do you have any music to plug here? Any original work you want to get people listening to?
Yeah, I put out a record at the end of beginning of 2019, and it's under my name. It's on Spotify, and the album is called, get ready for this, The Middle Tennessee Postmodern Experimental Pop Band. And nice. That was my band in Nashville. And some really killer players, really great people. A lot of my favorite folks in Nashville played all over that record. And I sang and played and mixed and produced it. So, go check it out, man. It's on Spotify.
Great. Well,
and everywhere else, all the other streamers. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll post the link to that too on my social, on the Savage Pad social media. I try to drive some streams for our guy, Billy Bennett. It's always great.
A couple of nickels come my way. That's always
nice. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like you're basically giving him like a fifth of a penny for every 100 times you listen to his album. Yeah. So go listen
to
it.
Thank you.
Well, Billy, thank you again for joining us. Congrats again on finishing up school. And we wish you the best moving forward here.
Thanks, Doug.
I'll be a dog till I die. Till I die, till I die.
Okay, that wraps up our Dog Till I Die segment. But before we get to the pick six, I got to play you guys a snippet from Billy Bennett's debut album titled The Middle Tennessee Postmodern Experimental Pop Band. This is the man that beat Alabama in 2002, Billy Bennett.
Your fantasy man. I will take you home with me. You know that I can. And I will let your friends all laugh at me because I'm a man. Yes, I will be your fantasy man. And I will level out your day crazy, and I will be your anchor, babe, or when you're feeling wavesy, and I will sit down and listen first and never explain. Yeah, don't you want a fantasy man? Fantasy man, I know it's crazy.
Dog fans, you can stream the entire album on Spotify or Apple Music. Again, the title of the album is The Middle Tennessee Postmodern Experimental Pop Band by Billy Bennett. The song you just listened to was the single Fantasy Man.
Next segment, extra point. So finally time to talk Georgia, Alabama, number three Georgia at number two Alabama. Our second college game day in 3 weeks. Predictions are all over the place for this game. I don't think people really know what to do with this one. I don't know that I do, but I think Alabama's offense is elite. I think that's being overlooked because of they've given up some points and people have kind of like if their defense had played well, people would be talking about like, holy cow, this Alabama offense is a juggernaut. Like nobody can stop them. I don't know if they're as unstoppable as LSU last year. So we've seen what happens when an elite Georgia defense takes on an elite SEC offense, and that was with Joe Burrow. But, like, Alabama doesn't have Joe Burrow. Like, if we can get to Mac Jones, if Georgia can get to Mac Jones, it's a different story than getting pressure on Joe Burrow because he's just going to run around and make a play. Mac Jones, I don't know. Might be different with QB2 for Bama, hoping we don't see him. But I don't know. I feel with the whole QB2 thing, I feel like we got to, like, it's kind of like in The Incredibles when Dash is running on the track with the other kids and he's like slowing down to like not get too far ahead of them. Like when you're playing Bama in your Georgia, you don't want QB2 to come in. It's just like you want to give Mac Jones a little bit. You know, you give him enough for them to feel like he can be the guy until the end of the game. And then that's when you like make your play on him.
Yes.
I'm not being serious, but I do feel like it's probably good to have his number, but not so much that we get up by like two or three touchdowns.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think
Well, first off, for this game, we're already losing on both sides for both fans because CBS got the game. So Gary Danielson will be doing all the game analysis, which if anyone listens to the CBS broadcasts, you'll remember most recently this week when Gary Danielson was praising Jared Garantano for like never throwing interceptions and only throwing like 10 in his career. And then as he was saying that, Eric Stokes picked him off.
So my theory on CBS is, and you'll hear people talk all the time in like the sports industry about like, how do you get people to go to games? How do you get people to get off their sofa and pay $100 to go sit out in the sun or go sit out in the cold or the rain or whatever the conditions are? And I know exactly how you get Gary Danielson to call the games. And people are like, you know what? I'm just going to go buy a ticket so I can just watch it and not hear anyone annoy me during the game about like the last time Alabama beat Georgia like 600 times during this game or how fast Anthony Schwartz is for the 800 millionth time in the Georgia-Auburn series. So I think it's a play by CBS to get people, you know, I guess in their partnership with the SEC.
Yes.
They're also like, yes, they want to drive advertising for TV and they're going to get theirs, but they also want to drive some attendance. And Gary Danielson is a key player in all that.
Oh, yeah. So outside of that, for me, the key things for the game, I mean, I feel like field position is just so critical. And like, I feel like we have an advantage there with our special teams and how they're playing in our defense. And I just feel like we have to, like, set Stetson up to like perform well, which like if you look at like when he's thrived so far this season, the first two games, like it's been when we're already like on the other side of the 50 and like Todd Monken's able to create plays that are like easy over the middle throws, like not predictable runs, but like we're also already on the plus side of the field, so like there's not as big of a worry about picking up yards after yards. So I think that is huge. I think like we know how well Alabama's coached and we know how disciplined they are with Saban. So I think like we can't have stupid penalties. Like, I mean, I just feel like if there's a game where Pickens has to be on his best behavior, whatever that looks like, it like, has to be this game, because I'm sure like Alabama's coaches are already coaching up all their DBs to just like do everything they can to provoke him into doing something stupid.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I would do.
Yeah, and I think that scares me. It's like I could pick up, we have a big, you know, big passing play, and next thing you know, it's 15-yard personal foul going the other way. And I think can our cornerbacks do enough against, you know, this probably the best wide receiving core in the nation with Jalen Waddle, Devonta Smith, and John Metchie at that, you know, that slot position. I think like I'm not expecting our guys to shut them down. I'm just like, can they hold on long enough to where like our run defense shuts down the runs and like they have to throw, and then we're able to kind of drop back and like put two safeties deep and like make, you know, Mac Jones do these like spectacular throws that he might not be able to do. And then I'm excited, like this is, you know, this is the test for our run defense. Like everyone thinks they're the best run defense in the nation, and like they probably are, but it's like this is their proving game, and I'm excited to see like how well they're coached up and how well, you know, how excited they are to go against like the cream of the crop competition at running back. So I think those are like the key things to the game. I literally just typed my score out now because I was just debating it for so long, but I'm going to say 31-27 UGA. I think we're sweating it the whole way. Like, I don't think either team really gets out ahead or like puts up like a big lead on either team. I think it's kind of a back and forth game. And then I think we just get like an extra couple stops. And with field position, we kind of combine that into, you know, some field goals that give us the edge late. And then I think it's one of those games where Bama has the ball last and it's up to our defense, kind of like, you know, the Notre Dame game in 2019 or 2018, where we have to force, you know, some sort of turnover on downs or something late to ice the game out. And so I think that puts every UGA fan, you know, on the edge of their seat and pulling their hair out. But I think that's the type of game it's going to be against a team like this.
I literally just got anxious, like, in my chair in my little studio here. Like, my heart's beating. Like, the game's already going on. Like, that kind of game, I don't know if my body can handle it. At the same time, that's really what you want against Alabama. Like, we've seen enough Georgia-Alabama games where, like, we're down 3 touchdowns or more at halftime. Like, that could – I mean, it's always a possibility when you're playing Alabama. And so, to be in a close game, like, when you have a shot late in the game, that's what you want, ultimately. You really can't ask for anything more against a team that talented. But, golly, this one's tough. So, I'll tell you my gut feeling. My gut My prediction from the outset of the season has been Georgia wins out except for the Alabama game, right? So my thinking going into the season was like, I don't think Georgia's offense prior to Jamie Newman, but especially now with the new coordinator, you know, a lot of new, like guys like Kendall Milton who are just kind of starting to get going. That could be big pieces. Guys like Jermaine Burton or Darnell Washington, that could be big assets late in the season. It's like they're kind of still like getting in a rhythm, and it's like there's not that chemistry, and like Alabama's offense is firing on all cylinders. Like they are a well-oiled machine at this point. Yes, their defense has not been good, but if you watch them, like where they're getting beat really is stuff that we're not even doing, like the deep ball. I'm hoping the mailman delivers. So I'll say this, my gut is Georgia loses this one 38-24. And like, please don't hate me for saying that. It's just my gut feeling. I can't help what my gut tells me. I'm a pessimist from having watched so much Georgia football. Oh, yeah. And it's like, if I go into these games, I do it to protect myself. I think I'm like, yeah, we're going to lose. And then if something good happens, then I'll just lose my mind. That's what I'll lose. So that's my gut. But I think this game, I think, you know, if these teams played a couple times, I think it could go a couple different ways. And by the way, my gut was also that Georgia drops this one, wins out, gets a rematch against Bama, you know, like we did against Auburn a few years back. Yeah. and has a revenge game in Atlanta. So with an offense that's gelling and kind of coming into their own at that point with the same level of defense. If Georgia wins this one, my score for losing was 38-24. My score for winning was 1 point away from yours, 31-28. So like if Georgia's going to win this game, I think they've got to play a clean game. No snapping the ball into the end zone. No George Pickens squirting water and laughing like a child on the sideline. None of that. Bama's going to get theirs. They're going to get their points. That's what they do. They got, you know, great quarterback, great running back, great line, great receivers. And they're going to score points. So you can't give them anything extra like we did against Tennessee. And another thing is Georgia's not built for a shootout, really. Yeah. So I think if Georgia can drag Bama down offensively, like we did in 2018 in the Natty and also in the SEC Championship, I think that'll be giving ourselves our best shot. In that kind of game, special teams and turnovers determine the outcome. And given that we've had the superior kicking game, punting game, and defense so far this season, that's the kind of game where, you know, we would just need the offense to make enough plays to keep the game competitive. But that's the kind of game Georgia could really win. So it'll be interesting. I think here's my thing. Having watched Bama and how well they protect Mac Jones and how unbeatable they look with Mac Jones just standing back there, just like, I mean, he's pretty accurate on the deep ball. He's got receivers that can catch just about anything. He's just back there, just, I mean, just threading the needle, but just airing it out, doing whatever he wants to do. Yeah. We haven't really seen how he handles like a lot of pressure, like getting knocked down every play and he hasn't had that happen. He hasn't had to face that. And so Jared Garantano and Bo Nix, both those guys are super elusive. I mean, they're athletes. They're able to kind of make plays out of stuff, or you kind of have to be a little reserved with bringing the pressure on them. I'm not so sure Mac Jones. I think of him more of like if Eli Manning or Phillip Rivers or Peyton Manning or Tom Brady, you know, somewhere in there, like is back there where it's like, yes, they can make all the throws. He's not going to escape too much pressure. And, you know, Adam Anderson and Aziz Ojulari, if those guys can be getting hits on him, if they can get past that beast of an offensive line, I think Georgia's going to be in a very close game and have a chance to do something special in Tuscaloosa. I really do. So I think that's what it comes down to on defense. I think if they're not able to do that, you cannot count on those corners and safeties to just blanket those Alabama receivers. They're so fast. And we've had guys get by us. And I mean, at the Tennessee game, I was there. There were a couple plays where, you know, they had guys open on the long ball, but Garantano was on his back. He wasn't able to make a throw. And so it's like they got to get to Mac Jones to take away some of those deep passing options. They got to stop the run too. So stopping the run and getting to the quarterback, to me, that's the keys to the game for Georgia. And then keep it clean. I think Georgia could win one. Like I said, like I can see like a 38, 31-28 type score, which for Bama, would be low scoring. I know it's a weird day, weird age in football when that's a low scoring game in the SEC, but it is at this point for Bama. I mean, they're scoring, you know, I think their first three games probably averaged about 50 points a game, or somewhere in the 50s.
Yeah.
So that's how I'm feeling. That's how I'm feeling. I'm nervous, but like I said before, I think it's kind of a fun one because most times we play Bama, it's like all or nothing and everything's on the line. This time, like, we got a fun team. You know, Stetson's so fun to pull for because it just doesn't feel like every time he accomplishes anything, it just feels amazing that he's doing it. And you're just so proud of him.
Yeah.
The defense is just amazing. They're so fun to watch. And if Georgia goes out and wins this game, they'll pretty much be in a situation where they'll have to split the SEC championship and the Florida game. But even if they win this game and go lose to Florida, let's say Georgia wins this game and wins out except for Florida, loses to Florida. I know y'all hate hearing that, but theoretically, Georgia loses to Florida, beats Alabama, wins the rest of their games. Florida makes the SEC championship in this scenario. I think Georgia makes the playoff. One loss to a team that goes and loses to Alabama or beats Alabama, one of the two. But Georgia's going to be a one-loss SEC team with wins over Alabama, Auburn, Tennessee, you know, et cetera. And so I think if they win this game, they improve their playoff chances significantly. But also think if they lose this game. If they lose this game, got to go beat Florida, which is usually the case, and you got to go win the SEC. So they still control their own destiny regardless of what happens. It's just early in the season to find out. We could really solidify our playoff chances if we pull out a win on Saturday. So it'll be fun. I'm not going to lose hope, you know, if it doesn't work out. And then if it does, they still got business to take care of.
Yeah, I think it's easy to look back on the last time we played, you know, Bama in the regular season. And
yeah,
I guess what, you were a sophomore, I was a freshman in college. So we had, and there was a lot of hype around that game. At the same time, like, I mean, we had so many question marks with that team. And that was ultimately, you know, Mark Richt's kind of last run. But I just remember, like, the hype building up to that game. And, you know, ultimately we go out and it's the pouring down, you know, miserable day in Athens. And we get our, you know, butts handed to us. But I feel like just the climate around this year's team is so different because they know that they can, like, I think our team knows they can beat Bama. Like, yeah, it's different guys than, you know, the 2018 season. But it's like we practically have beaten them the last two games. We've just given it away. And so I think, you know, I think this year it's all about, like, we can win. It's like, are we going to actually let ourselves win, or are we going to somehow, you know, hand this game over again? I don't know. I have a feeling that Kirby has them prepared in a way that, like, there's so many things with just how this year has gone to where it's like this year is going to be different because, like, we have a guy named Stetson, been a quarterback who we never, like, thought would have been there. And every time you see him hold the ball, you're like, is that, like, actually UGA starting quarterback? And then he, like, runs for a touchdown. You're like, he's actually kind of quick. Like, all right.
Yeah.
So I think it's just that type of season to where, like, Kirby finally breaks the curse and is the first, you know, Saban assistant to beat him, just because that's the type of year it is. And I think UGA knows, like, as a program, like, we can take this team down. We just have to not beat ourselves in the process. So
yeah,
that's what I'm leaning on.
Yeah. I mean, I think we can do it this year. I just think, I don't know if we're there yet at this point in the season.
Yeah.
So we'll find out on Saturday. But like I said, they got to play a clean game. If they play how they played against Auburn, I think if you have that game, but you take out Matt Landers and put on someone that's going to catch the ball in a long ball, then that's the kind of game you got to have. You got to have that Auburn game, plus you got to have a catch on that kind of long ball.
Yep.
Those opportunities aren't just, I mean, when you have opportunities to score, you got to capitalize on them. When you got opportunities for takeaways, you can't drop the ball. You know, you can't let them get on the fumble, those kinds of things. Like, 50-50 stuff's got to go Georgia's way on Saturday, as well as just kind of the typical kind of game you would expect between these two teams where they're fighting every play and really competing on the other plays. So we'll see what happens. I'm looking forward to it. It's kind of a late game, so I feel like all day Saturday, Georgia fans are just going to be, like, anticipating this one and just kind of trying to do something to let the game come and just see what happens. But night game in Tuscaloosa, with however many fans they'll have. I'll say this. I think we can be beneficiaries of the limited capacity fans in the crowd. That for a night game in Tuscaloosa, like, I feel like it'll be a lot easier with things how they are. So we'll see, but appreciate you all listening to the show. And I'll be wearing my mailman hat that a listener sent me in the mail during the game for our boy Stetson Bennett. So let's root on these Dogs on Saturday and let's just see what happens. Go Dogs.